Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and thanks for downloading the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Who Stays and Who Goes edition. Coming up, my broadcast partner Dave Lapham joins me to discuss free agency. More specifically, on this edition of the podcast, the Bengals' internal free agents, guys whose contracts are up, like Darquez Dennard, Tyler Eifert, C.J. Uzomah, and others. We'll discuss the players that we think are the most likely and least likely to return. Plus, we'll also discuss some key players going into the final year of their contracts and the likelihood that the Bengals sign them to extensions before the start of the season, most notably A.J. Green and Tyler Boyd. And in this week's Fun Facts interview, you'll get to know the Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin. Among other things, we'll look back at his memories of hanging around his dad's Super Bowl champion Chicago Bears. And we'll discuss Duke's career as a college and arena league quarterback. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since the little indicator on the dashboard that shows what side of the car the gas tank is on. I rent cars on my travels quite a bit and always try to save a few bucks by refilling the tank before returning the car. It used to be a pain in the butt to pull up to the pump, get out of the car, only to discover that the tank was on the opposite side. Now you look at that little indicator and always pull up on the proper side. A simple but brilliant innovation. Time to talk football. The Bengals announced on Friday that they have extended tender offers to five players whose contracts expire next Wednesday when NFL free agency begins. The most interesting move involved offensive lineman Trey Hopkins, who received a second-round tender and thus becomes a restricted free agent. That means that Hopkins can negotiate with other teams, but the Bengals have the right to match any offer he receives. If they elect not to match the offer, the Bengals get a second-round pick in this year's draft from the team that signs him. If Trey does not agree to a deal with another team, he's guaranteed a big raise from the Bengals. Second-round tenders get good money, a one-year deal for $3.11 million in Hopkins' case, unless he agrees to a longer deal. The Bengals also issued tenders to cornerback Tony McCray, guard Alex Redmond, defensive tackle Josh Tupou, and safety Brandon Wilson. That means the Bengals retain their exclusive rights for the upcoming season. Now time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. Lap, the topic for this podcast is free agency, specifically the Bengals' own free agents, guys that their contracts run out, they become free agents, will the Bengals try to bring them back? In some cases, you've got restricted free agents, and then you've got guys that aren't free agents this year, but it's coming, and they may try to extend them now before they reach that point. So let's start with the guys that are unrestricted free agents, beginning with Darquez Dennard. His contract ran out last year. They gave him his fifth-year option as a first-round draft pick, made a lot of money last year, $8.5 million. What do you think? How likely is it that he is retained?
I think there's a good chance they retain Darquez Dennard. I think a lot of people thought that he may get extended, but it didn't happen. I do think, you know, a guy that can play slot and outside like he's shown, he's very good inside. He's an excellent tackler coming out of Michigan State with Mark D'Antonio, a guy that we know a lot about. I mean, he's unbelievable. He doesn't miss very many tackles at all. But the primary thing the guy on the back end has to do is cover people, and he's shown that he can do it on the inside and the outside. And I think he's a good locker room influence. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to sign Darquez Dennard, but sometimes, you know, it just doesn't fit. The player wants more than is budgeted, and you feel like you better off to spend your money elsewhere, and those decisions are going to be made. But in my mind, Darquez Dennard is a guy that I would consider, you know, signing to a new contract for sure.
I would imagine he's going to get close to the top of the scale for a slot corner, which isn't the kind of money that the outside guys make. And to me, that probably makes it a little easier to bring him back.
I think it does. And I think, too, worst case scenario, a guy like Darquez Dennard, I think could kick inside to safety. you know, because he tackles so well and he's physical that way. I mean, he'd be a very good cover guy at the safety position. Now, you don't pay safeties like you pay cover corners like you're talking about. And if you can play slot corner, no reason to kick him inside to safety. But if you sign him to a long-term deal and then toward the end of it, if it's like, you know what, geez, maybe he's going to have to go inside. That's happened many times in the NFL. You don't find guys going the other way. You don't find them going safety, getting kicked outside the corner. But toward the end, you do find them periodically going from corner inside to the safety position. But it all depends how well, you know, stocked you are at safety. But I do think that Darquez Dennard gives you a lot of position versatility and a lot of football IQ and, you know, a very tough physical football player.
The Bengals' top three tight ends on the depth chart, when healthy, are all unrestricted free agents this year. Let's start with Tyler Eifert. He came back last year on a heavily incentivized deal based on how healthy he could stay. And unfortunately for Tyler and the Bengals, he was not able to stay healthy. I guess he wound up making about $5.5 million. He could have made $8.5 million. Does he come back to Cincinnati on a similar deal, or does he go elsewhere on a similar deal?
Boy, I mean, I think it's almost going to be like hit the redo, you know, like when you're playing in your backyard and you can't decide which way the play should go. Let's do a do-over, you know. It might be a do-over with the exact same structure. And I think his mindset would be the exact same. You know, there were other teams that were interested in Tyler Eifert out there. And, I mean, he felt a sense of obligation to stay with the Bengals because, you know, they'd been so good to him through all of these injury issues and rehabilitations, and so I could almost see the exact same thing. Bring him back again for a one-year deal, highly incentivized, and because, man, we know Dan, when he's out there, it's different. It is totally different. Every snap he took last year, they never played base defense one time. They were a nickel. So, you know, I mean, the Bengals offensive coaches knew when Tyler Eifert's on the field, they knew exactly what they were facing. And he still gets favorable mismatches. He gets matchups that are, you know, positive for him. So he's different. I mean, his injury, I think, was the first of the dominoes that started to fall and really disassembled that offense. I mean, it was a shell of itself as the season unfolded. And I think he was the lead domino.
C.J. Uzomah wound up being their top tight end last year, career-high 43 catches for 439 yards. He also played special teams. He's a late pick, so he has not made a lot of money in this to this point of his career, $2.5 million over 4 years. He's got a chance to get paid.
He does. And the other thing that he did as a former player, he played hurt. I mean, Ed's shoulder was not good, and he played all but probably 12 of the 16 games he played in pain. He played, sacrificing for the better of his teammates. So I think everybody in the locker room looked at him, and a lot of guys told both of us during the course of the year, man, that dude's – he's a battler, man. That's one tough guy. I mean, he's sucking it up. He's doing this. He's doing that. So I think he really got a long line of admirers based on the way he performed and how he had to perform, you know, with respect to not being 100% physically for a good part of it and still put up the numbers he put up. So I think he is going to get paid. I agree with you.
Then there's Tyler Kroft, third-round draft pick 2 years ago. He was really good as a red zone weapon. This past year he only played in five games because of a foot injury. I don't know if you can bring them all back. Is he the odd man out if C.J. Uzomah signs and maybe Eifert decides to return?
I know. The thing is that you're always, because of the Tyler Eifert injury question, you're always like, how many do I need? Do I need another one as an insurance policy? But how much money can you spend at the tight end position? You know, you can't pay all of them like they're Pro Bowlers. Right. You know, so it's going to be interesting. They're going to have to make some decisions there. But it is incredible that room, you know, is like somebody, you know, some terrorist dropped a bomb in that room. I mean, they're all beaten up, and in Uzomah, you know, even though he played, he was another one. They didn't have very many healthy bodies to deal with at that position group, which is a very, very key position in today's NFL, particularly in this offense that Zach wants to install. Tight end's big. Tight end's a big factor. So you have to have, you know, multiple guys that can perform a lot of variation in their physical abilities, you know, and doing different things. So it is a very, very key position for this offense.
Preston Brown, Came to town last year on a one-year, $4 million deal, wound up playing seven games. Played okay, considering he had a bad ankle. What do you think? Does Preston Brown come back?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's going to be, you know, obviously the linebacker position was a real disappointment last year. It's almost like Murphy's Law. I mean, the guy didn't miss any games in college, doesn't miss any games in the NFL, comes to Cincinnati and barely plays, misses a bunch of games when he returns to his hometown. So, I mean, they've got limited tape, I think, to evaluate him on when he was healthy. He was tried to play through it, through the injury, and I think it really did affect his play. But he's a big body guy that runs pretty well. But, you know, are they going to go in other directions, other areas at the linebacker position? His is a difficult one, I think, for this new coaching staff to evaluate. That's going to be an interesting one.
Let's go to the O-line. Bobby Hart started every game at right tackle. Didn't get particularly rave reviews from Pro Football Focus and others. Is he on this roster next year?
I don't think so. You know, I think that I do think that Bobby Hart gave everything he had to give. Bobby Hart maximized his abilities, and Frank Pollock helped him maximize his abilities. But man, you have to line somebody up out there at the tackle position. I mean, how many can you draft? That's one area in free agency that you got to think, man, if there's there's never any good ones out there. You know, it's always a guy just hanging on at the tail end of his career, whatever the case may be, that's out there in free agency. I mean, Andrew Whitworth was such an anomaly for him to be out there for the Rams to jump on, and they did. There's no question about it. That doesn't happen very often, a Pro Bowl caliber offensive tackle out there in free agency that you can gobble up. But, man, if they can find some kind of, you know, guy in his seventh year, you know, still has some years left and could be a real leader of the group and stabilize, you know, the outside at that tackle position, because, you know, it stands to reason that Owoyi and Fisher probably won't be back. So, you know, because of that reason, I guess you can't eliminate Bobby Hart. But I'm sure if they could go in another direction, they probably would.
There are some restricted free agents. The most intriguing name to me, Trey Hopkins. Only made $500,000 last year. Played well when called upon to fill in at center.
He did. You know, I think that, you know, center might be his best position. It really is. With those long arms, we talked about the advantage that a long arm center has ad nauseum. But it is a point. You know, a simple thing is extending the ball out so the defensive guy's just not under your grill. And you have a little bit of separation there before, you know, at the line of scrimmage to snap it. But he's smart, not incredibly gifted athletically, obviously, or he would have been drafted higher and probably would have played sooner and all those sort of things. But when you get him in a game, he plays. He doesn't hurt you. So it would not surprise me if they bring him back, because he does have position versatility. I think with his long arms, he could be an emergency tackle for you as well. But he's shown he can play guard. He's shown he can play center. Is he going to light it up and be a Pro Bowl candidate? No. But, you know, not everybody's going to be in the Pro Bowl.
All right, let's talk about a couple of guys that aren't free agents to be. They're still signed through the coming year. Two wide receivers, starting with Tyler Boyd. Final year of his four-year rookie deal coming up. He was not a first-round draft pick, so they don't have the fifth-year option. It's been a bargain. He'll make $980,000 approximately this year. Do they try to extend him before this season begins?
Pay the man. Got to pay the man. He's earned it. Yeah, I think you got to try to extend him. You know, in my mind.
What's the priority? Denard first, Boyd second, other way around?
You know, I think whichever agent comes to the table most realistic. You know, I'd pursue both of them almost on a simultaneous basis and tell both representatives, money's on the table, who wants it?
Now, Boyd is signed through this year, whereas Denard, right, you'd have to sign him to bring him back.
Right, that's true. So, and I would. I'd probably have separate pots a little bit, but it would still be coming out of that overall kitty, you know, so I'd basically, you know, try to stimulate Boyd's agent to, you know, he's going to say, look, you know, if he plays this year out, you guys won't be able to afford him. Well, you know, it's going to be interesting how that negotiation unfolds, I think he's going to be an unbelievable fit for this offense as well. I think he's going to eat it up. And because he does two things well. He catches the football, and he's tough. So Andy Dalton will – he's open when he's covered because he knows he'll fight for the football. He's not going to – he's not going to let the other guy come down with it if it's a 50-50 proposition. He's very physical, a tremendous route runner, has a real sense for finding openings in defense, having played the quarterback position. He's the real deal. He's a legitimate guy. But in my mind, speed, all that stuff's important, but can he catch it, and is he tough? He checks both those boxes big time.
Then there's A.J. Green. Turns 31 in July. He's already received two hefty contracts from the Bengals. His four-year, $60 million deal runs out at the end of this year. Arguably the best player in franchise history is right up there with Anthony Munoz. Has he got a third contract coming from Cincinnati?
You would think he would. I mean, not only for what he's done on the field, but the way he's comported himself off the field. The guy's been a franchise dream, He really has. I mean, I think that probably every owner, general manager, head coach would like to say, here's an example of how to handle yourself as a professional in the National Football League. This guy's got all kinds of talent. Look at Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. Look what happened in Pittsburgh. I mean, the antithesis of that is A.J. Green. It's incredible. So he has that type of skill set that those guys have. He has the unbelievable, wow factor. I mean, he makes, as we've seen over the years in training camp and practice, and the players say, he makes catches every week that's like, what? So, I mean, he hasn't shown any diminishing physical skill sets. He can still run, jump, do everything he's done.
Has been hurt, though, two out of the last 3 years.
Yeah, he has had a little bit of an injury bugaboo. I don't know, maybe some of it. Maybe you structure it to try to cover yourself that way. But with a guy his caliber, that's awful tough to do. I mean, that's very, very tough to do. But, yeah, he's a guy that, I mean, when Anthony Munoz was holding out, all of us, what the hell? They're not going to sign him. Well, how the hell are we going to sign a contract? Nobody can do anything more than he's done for this football team, on and off the football field. My God. And I think that's how players would feel, if A.J. Green got into a contentious situation. My God, they're not going to sign him. Who are they going to sign?
Yeah, I guess the question is, in his case, do you get it done before this year, as you did the last time he was up, or do you say, let's let this one play out, see if he's healthy, see if he's still the AJ that he's been, and if so, open the vault and pay him the going rate.
Yeah, that could be the way. It's all pieces of the puzzle that you'll put into the bigger puzzle as it happens. I mean, I think it's all going to be all right. Well, here's stuff that's out there. If somebody bites and jumps on it, okay, we'll move that piece, and now we have to adjust these. There's not as much for this and as much for that anymore because he took his. So there is a little bit of pressure okay, do I take this opportunity and maximize this, or do I say I'm going to play it out? And, because, it takes two to tango. The organization, has a number. The agent has a number. And if the agent says, let's play it out, it could work either way. I mean, it's a total roll of the dice. But when you're doing salary, you have a salary cap to work with, and you're trying to figure it all out, it's like a moving target, It's whoever steps up and comes to the plate first, and then you adjust accordingly.
Before we wrap it up, congratulations are in order for A.J. and Miranda Green on the birth of their second son, Gunner Blaze Green. Is that kid going to be an athlete?
How about that? He's got a great name. Gunner Blaze Green. Wow. Yeah, I'm just like with his first son, I want to sign up first to be representative of that young man because I'm sure he'll be as physically gifted as possible. That's great. What a great family. That really is. I mean, A.J. Green, they throw around that term pros pro. This guy, Webster's Dictionary, if that term pros pro is in there, his picture's right there, man.
Thanks, Lap. There will be tons of NFL news next week. Teams are allowed to negotiate with the agents of upcoming unrestricted free agents from Monday to Wednesday. Then at 4 o'clock on Wednesday, March 13th, the new league year officially begins. That's when last year's contracts expire. The trading period officially opens, so trades we've heard about in recent days don't become official until then. And free agents can officially sign new contracts. Now time for this week's edition of Fun Facts, and my guest is Duke Tobin, a member of the Bengals front office since 1999 and one of the most important people in the organization. He oversees the draft, plays a key role in trades and free agency, and took part in the hiring process of new head coach Zach Taylor. Time for some fun facts with the Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin. And Duke, for those who don't know, your dad is a former NFL GM. Your uncle Vince is a former NFL head coach, so you've been around the game your whole life. As a kid, did your dad let you hang around his teams?
Oh, absolutely. That's really all I did other than playing sports myself. And then when I had free time, I'd be up at Hallis Hall or being a ball boy or working security or pulling the nets at the games or just hanging around the locker room. So, yeah, I grew up around pro football, and that's really all I've ever known.
Did you realize as a kid how lucky you were?
Well, I don't think you ever realize. I don't think any kid ever realizes how lucky they are. It was just standard. It was part of life. It was every day for me. And so, no, you don't, as a kid, reflect on how lucky you are really ever.
We're doing fun facts with Duke Tobin. Your dad was largely responsible for building one of the greatest and most colorful teams in NFL history, the 1985 Chicago Bears. We're talking Walter Payton, The Fridge, Jim McMahon, Mike Ditka, etc. You were 15 at the time. What are your memories of that team?
I've got great memories of that team. They had ability. They had character. They enjoyed the game. They were a team. They enjoyed each other. They had fun. It was more than a job. It was their lifestyle. And when I look at players today, those are the players I compare them to. Those are the guys I'm always trying to find. And, you know, Walter Payton being the number one, you know, that's when you grade a guy, that's kind of the high end of the scale. And then how good is he compared to? And a lot of those Bears of the 80s are guys that that kind of shaped my opinion of what a football player should be.
Where did you watch that Super Bowl?
I was on the field. It was exciting. It was, I would say, nerve-wracking, but it really wasn't because you felt like there wasn't anything that could stop that team. It just it had a chemistry and a uniqueness to it that it was going to happen, and I think the players felt it, and certainly all the support staff felt it.
We're doing fun facts for the Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin. Duke, you are a fine athlete in your own right and went on to be a college football quarterback. I found an old Chicago Tribune story about you from your high school days. The headline was, "Tobin in relatively good shape," which sounds like it could be about you now, but it was actually kind of a play on the fact that you had these family ties. The article said that your dining room table was covered with brochures and letters from college teams. Did you enjoy the attention?
Well, I think any young guy enjoys the attention. We had a successful team, and the high school football experience is still by far the best football experience I've ever had, and I think for most people that's true. The recruiting experience was a little bit nerve-wracking, a little bit stressful. I was fortunate to have a choice of a lot of places to go to. And, you know, I tried to make the most of it and tried to make the best decisions for me, and I had a lot of good help, too. So.
You started out close to home at Illinois playing football and baseball, and the starting quarterback when you got there was Jeff George. You went on to be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft. You evaluate talent now for a living. Strictly in terms of arm talent, how good was Jeff George?
Well, he was really good. It's humbling throwing next to a guy like that because it shows all your deficits pretty quick. And so when I showed up there, he was a little bit awe-inspiring to watch how the ball came out of his hand. One of the strongest arms, quickest releases that you can see and that I've ever seen. And I was fortunate to be on some good college teams. And I think for my job right now, that kind of helped me in shape, you know, what I look for and what a good college player is, because those Illinois teams were good. And then when I went to Colorado, we had some very fine teams there and a lot of very good players that played in the NFL.
You finished your college career with 2 years at Colorado, and the quarterback there when you got to Colorado was Cordell Stewart. Not the arm talent of Jeff George, but another guy that at practice it was probably kind of intimidating seeing Slash's athletic ability.
Yeah, and I wouldn't underestimate his arm strength either. He had a strong arm and could throw it a long way. Different style quarterback than Jeff. Jeff wasn't mobile at all, but Cordell could really run, make plays when things broke down. Things broke down a lot, and so he had to do that. Whether it broke down because of what he was doing or what the rest of the offense was doing is probably a pick'em. But the other guy we had there was Vance Joseph, and Vance didn't have a weak arm either. Vance could really sling it too. So made a lot of good connections there, and have a lot of good friends from those days.
Duke, you did get to start a game at Colorado when Cordell was injured. What are your memories of that day?
Well, the better game for me was the game leading into that, the Baylor game. I was able to come in, had some success down in Waco, and then the start didn't go the way it should have, at least the way that I wanted it to. And, you know, we ended up winning the game at the end, but that was up in Minneapolis, probably not my finest hour. But, you move on and move forward, and that probably galvanized me in a lot of ways, so I'm probably grateful for it.
Playing football wasn't finished after college. You went on to play in the Arena League for a couple of years with the Orlando Predators and the Memphis Pharaohs. Did you make any money playing Arena League football?
You know, for a guy just out of college, any money seems like a lot of money. And so, yeah, we made a little bit, and they put us up. They gave us a place to live and room and board and, you know, an automobile to drive. And so there were some positives to it. We had a good team there as well. And I think a lot of college football players don't want to admit that it's over. I probably fell into that bucket and said, hey, why not give it another year or two. Ended up getting hurt, and it wasn't worth giving your knee ligament for it, for sure, and started scouting soon after that. I realized where my lot was.
A couple more fun facts with the Bengals Director of Player Personnel, Duke Tobin. Let's go inside the Bengals war room, so to speak, on draft day. Who is the most animated person that weekend?
I like to think we're all pretty calm and collected. Probably the most animated person is whoever is the position coach for the position that we're talking about at that given moment. But we try to stay level-headed and calm. We try to get all of the discussions out of the way in the weeks leading up to the draft so that there aren't a lot of animated discussions. We kind of know where we're heading, and if there were differences, we try to cross those, bridge those differences prior to that moment in there. So a lot of it is fans would be very shocked. It's people sitting around and, you know, reading their iPads and watching TV and watching the clock tick away and crossing off names. And so it's a pretty calm room for the most part.
You alluded to this earlier. There are a lot of folks out there that make mock drafts. It is a cottage industry for people. Do people that know what you do for a living try to get insight for their own mock draft?
I don't believe so. I don't get questions that way. I think that that people are interested in what we feel and how we look at players, and we do try to have some events as the year goes on and as the draft approaches. We have some events for sponsors and suite holders and season ticket holders and so forth. We try to give them an insight into what we do and how we do it, and we even put on some film and to say, hey, this is what we like in a player and this is what we don't like in a player. So we do try to explain the process to important people and business partners, but I don't get a lot of questions from people trying to put together mock drafts, no.
All right, you're off the hot seat. Thanks for the time.
You bet.
That's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or Podbean. And if you have a minute, give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback's always appreciated, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.